Hello, guys, and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis Fitz
and Benjamin Holden.
So, today we have a very special guest. Now, this is Chris Wills. Anyone say hi?
Hi.
So, I met Chris, I think, a little bit later than you. You already knew each other, and I kind of came into the picture, didn't I? Not that long after, which was at Body Power, but if you could kindly tell us a little bit about yourself and for everybody listening, that would be wonderful.
Lovely. Yeah, so first off, my name's Chris Williamson. I know that my Instagram handle has got you confused there, but no, yeah, so we met, when was it, Body Power 2 years ago. That was at a hectic weekend where all that we had was Nocco and Bear Bells for a weekend.
You're getting sick for about a week after.
Yeah, it was the worst diet. So yeah, my name's Chris. I'm a podcaster, business owner from Newcastle. About 13 years ago, I started filling club nights with my business partner, and that's still what I do on a day-to-day basis. Always had an interest in health and fitness and training, so been through the whole bro split bodybuilding thing, went and did Thai boxing and fighting out in Thailand for a while, now sort of more on that functional fitness flex, doing more CrossFit style stuff. I've done Take Me Out, got to meet Paddy McGuinness, that was fun. I went to the Isle of Fernando's.
I didn't know that.
I know, I'm a treasure trove of secrets, Lucy.
Was rocking a very different hairdo at the time.
You get a screenshot and put it over the top.
Nowadays.
Did that, was on season one of Love Island. That was also fun. I'd just do anything for a free holiday, basically.
basically, we just sum you up in that sentence. Anything for a free holiday.
Yeah. Anyone fancies inviting me out somewhere so that I can make a tit of myself on TV, as long as it's a free holiday in it. I'm all over it. So yeah, did that. And then a couple of years ago, released Modern Wisdom, which is my passion project at the moment. We've just done 1.5 million downloads like last week, which is great.
Really well done.
And you've got a very interesting episode out shortly, haven't you? Which I've just seen.
With Chelsea.
Yes.
Yeah, I was
creasing.
That is hilarious.
When is that one out?
It's out today. So Chelsea Ferguson, who is the founder of AdmireMe.VIP, which is a website where people can sell their nudes direct to customers. And she generated 10 mil of revenue in 16 months.
I think I'm in the wrong industry.
Well, Lucy, what are you doing?
Just calm down a little bit. Yeah.
She said that she's got some profiles for couples, Ben, so that could be the...
Wow.
That
could be our next branch off the micro school is porn online. It's something that we've never really discussed to be in the business plans, but hey.
If you're interested, subscribe below.
Yeah, wow. But today's episode is going to all be on the effects of alcohol on fitness, the body, the mind. And it's the reason why I brought Chris on this episode is because he has been sober now for
18 months on this stint, but out of the last 3 years, I've been sober for like 2.5 of them.
Yeah, which is even more interesting because one of the branches of your business that you run is essentially student night, isn't it?
Yeah, so the elephant in the room is I believe in sobriety as a really effective productivity tool. And I use it myself, and I'm really passionate about it. My most recent project is 6 months Sober, which is an online course that helps guide people through sobriety, that they want to be more productive and have more time, more money, more calories. But the elephant in the room is that I make my living from getting people drunk.
It's great.
Yeah, I know. But like the way that I frame it is, I think especially when you're young, in the way that society is built up at the moment, it's important to go out and have drunken nights with your friends, to experience what it's like to have an argument with your mate at 2 a.m, or to lose your keys and be locked out of your house with no money and no taxi home at like in some random city you've never been to. Because that's what a representative upbringing looks like at the moment, right? Like if you want to grow up and be 25, 30, 35, 40 and have experiences that allow you to relate to other people and their experiences, you want to do what other people are doing to some degree, right? My problem, and I think you guys are probably pretty good avatars for this as well, is my problem is repeating that weekend warrior lifestyle for, you know, the next 2 decades. And there's nothing worse to me than seeing someone who's, you know, in their 30s or their 40s, who's got loads of potential and has just been sabotaging themselves on the sesh every weekend for the last 2 decades. It's terrible.
Well, you start to see that massively when you sometimes bump into your peers in later life, and they're still living that same train they were on maybe 10 years ago. And me and Lucy were discussing it yesterday in relation to, because we've both been to university as well, is that when you are in that sort of social environment and that point in your life, you do go every weekend and you do all go out and enjoy it. And I suppose you cram a hell of a lot in those 3 years of going out and getting wasted and stuff, and it gets to a point where it's you've how much more of it can you do? Like you've crammed a lot of it in, you've got wasted a lot of time, you've been sick more times than you can remember, and you've created some memories. So it comes to a point where you need to, I suppose, grow the fuck up a little bit, or at least tone it down a little bit in respect for you to then move forward with other segments of your life.
Well, it's one of those things as well. Obviously, if you continue it in later life or whatever you said, like your peers and stuff, this is when you start to bring in like the fitness element of things in terms of like if you, for example, have a specific goal which is weight loss and you're not losing weight and you're still getting drunk twice, three, whatever, once a week, that is why. But people can't kind of put two and two together. They can't relate that that is why, which is, I don't know, it's fascinating to me that people can't see alcohol as like a calorie.
Yeah, they
If that
say
makes
something
sense,
completely
it's
different,
just
where at the end of the
like
day, a calorie is a fucking calorie, but
a.
they for some reason say it's completely something different.
Especially when you account for the hungover Domino's the next day, you know, the
Yeah.
takeaway on a night time. What's a beer? Is a beer probably about like a pint of beer, maybe 250, 200, something like that?
Will be, yeah.
Yeah. So you think, let's say that you're on a slow cut as a man at 2, 2, 2, 3, or as a girl at, I don't know what girls cut at, like 1700, maybe something like that. You think like a couple of pints is a significant proportion of your entire daily's caloric allowance?
It's the impact it obviously has the next day in regards to your energy expenditure as well, because the majority of the time people will be sitting around doing nothing the next day apart from feeling sorry for themselves and throwing some shit on Netflix. So it's taking into account that your movement's going to be lower on top of you probably being in a calorie surplus as well, and the other effects that it has on you. So that's obviously a big one. But me and Lucy were speaking yesterday in regards to what we do with alcohol. So with us, we only ever really drink on events, don't we?
Yeah,
It
on like
really
the
happens
occasion.
at the moment, does it? So
Yeah.
like New Year, Christmas, birthdays, other celebrations. So it's not even probably once a month that we drink at the moment, is it?
Like maybe like once every 3 months,
Yeah.
I'd say.
So.
And like, do you know what's a weird thing? Because I'm 23 and still like loads of my friends will go out every single weekend. But it's like I'm not on a different planet, but I just don't do that anymore. And people see it as like it's like forbidden that you drinking as much, but I hate it when people see it as that, and I still feel like there's so much pressure
Yeah.
sometimes as well to like to have to drink if you're still young and all that.
I don't really social drink either. I don't know about you, Chris, or what you like beforehand. I don't really just have like one or two drinks with a meal. Like I'm not the biggest fan of the taste of it. I'd rather a Diet Coke or something, to be honest. So if I'm out for a meal, I'd much rather do that. And then if I'm gonna go to an event, then I'll probably drink to get pissed, which is probably not the best way to look at it, but that's kind of how we sort of with alcohol mix that with fitness, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I get that. So there's this quote from a guy that I spoke to, Ed Latimore, who says, alcohol is the only drug where if you don't do it, people assume you have a problem.
Yeah, I like
Yeah,
that.
that is literally how I feel.
You can say, it's like, tell someone that you're going to have 20 pints and everyone applauds you. Tell someone that you're not drinking tonight and they lose their mind. It's so bizarre, but it's because we're mimetic beings, right? Naturally, the whole point of us, the way that humans evolved, we're tribal. Behavior which conforms to the tribe gets reinforced. Behavior which goes against the tribe gets like pronounced. So inevitably, if you're young, especially like 23, to be away from that drinking culture, especially in the UK, especially in the north of the UK, it's like it is, you're an outlier. Like in that regard. But
Completely.
one of the things that you've touched on there is the fact that you have something in your life which is making you transcend your weekend warrior lifestyle. So it's not necessarily that you don't enjoy drinking or don't enjoy partying, it's that your priorities in life, elsewhere in life, are greater than your desire to drink, right?
Yeah,
But
that's me.
imagine if it's a different iteration of the world where Lucy maybe doesn't have an interest in fitness. Lucy doesn't have her online business and you know, all of these different projects going on and photo shoots and stuff like that. And you're maybe working a job that you're a little bit uninspired by, and you've not really got that much to look forward to on a weekend, and you don't actually have that much capital or surplus income either. If you've only got 30, 40 pounds a week extra to spend to make life exciting, like, what's the easiest way to make life exciting? Like, if you spend 30 or 40 quid on booze, life will get exciting pretty quick. But you know what I mean? Like, those small amounts of money without much reason to kind of transcend that partying lifestyle, it does mean that people continue to do it. And you touched on something as well, Ben, which is perfect, where you said that after you get out of uni, you're like, well, how many times do you want to get pissed? And the question that I always ask, or when people say, why, how come you went sober? I'm like, I had nothing left to learn from alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh,
for me, one of the primary things in life is I always want to be improving or developing. I'm curious. I want to learn and become different, better, whatever it might be. And it's like doing the same 4-day split in the gym with the same weights for your entire training career. It's like, no, like, you progressively overload and you vary your training and you do other things based on what your requirements are. But this is just the same, like, push-pull-leg split and the same weights that you entered the gym with for the next 10 years.
I think in regard to touching on, like, what you can learn from alcohol, a big thing for me last year, and I know I understand why people may have different reasons of why they drink for confidence or because they're depressed or whatever other reasons that we can get into. But it was interesting last year, and I haven't told anyone this yet, so this is a bit of an exclusive.
You told me.
You were there moaning at me about it.
I was there moaning.
It was at IFS events last year, which is like one of the biggest speaking gigs we did last year for the first time. And before we went on to talk, it's one of those fitness events where everyone's getting wasted and stuff anyway, and it's quite laid back, it's quite chill. It's not like your normal Body Power where you've got bodybuilders walking around and stuff.
Is it that thing that just got released the other day?
Yeah, we did Barcelona last year. We'll be speaking in Lisbon this year.
Congratulations, man. Well done.
Get involved, then we'll put the links up somewhere for people to register and stuff, and early registration is now open. But last year when we did the event, I must have had about 4 or 5 double gin and tonics, like fish bowls, purely for the fact that I was shit myself before. I mean, I never really drink that much, but I was drinking. I was like, I feel a bit better about myself about now. My nerves aren't as high as where. It's a pattern that I wouldn't necessarily like to get into, but I can understand why people may do it.
But how often are you speaking on stage in front of a couple of hundred or maybe 1,000 people? Do you know what I mean? Like, how much do you need that? So you've touched on a load of different areas there that I think are super important. So one of them is called living with the edge. So that's what you've referred to there, which is that there are certain good and bad emotions that we feel in life. And alcohol is an anesthetic, right? It sedates you from feeling things. It's a numbing agent. So it actually reduces down the things that you feel, which is why your sense, that sensory kind of overload of I'm nervous, I'm anxious, my brain's working too fast, you sedate yourself and you don't feel it as much. The same as if you take a painkiller or anything like that. But there's an argument to be made that life is meant for living, right? And that if you're going to do anything, you might as well sit with that edge as much as you can and fully immerse yourself in it, because that's how you're going to learn the most. Now, that being said, if you got up on stage and were so nervous that you can't get your words out, that's dangerous. But on the flip side of that, what might you have learned from that experience, or what skills might you have developed had you not have had those drinks? Would it have forced you into a new area of growth where you completely intrinsically overcame that level of anxiety? And this has implications for one of the main reasons that people use alcohol, right, which is confidence to speak to people. A lot more people than admit it are actually really, really socially awkward. Like, I'll put my hand in the air. I've seen a million people, right, walk into club nights that I've run, 1.5 million downloads on podcasts and stuff like that, and I still get socially awkward around people just because you do, right? It's natural.
I do, massively.
Yeah, and to hear that you, Lucy, with like nearly 500,000 followers on Instagram and doing all the YouTube stuff and this, that, and the other. I hear this criticism all the time about Craig Ritchie. People say because they've seen him on YouTube and he's real outgoing, but in real life, he's just kind of a normal guy who probably keeps himself to himself a lot. And then they're like, oh, Craig, like, he was a bit of a dick. Like, he wasn't really that outgoing. It's like, he is not the person you see on YouTube every single day. That's the person he has to be to get the energy across in his YouTube. Same as you guys, right?
So he has a highlight reel,
essentially. I don't even think that's, like, a negative, though, because I think a lot of people say, well, he's two different people and he's pretending to be someone else. It's not. It's just that you've got to project your personality within a 20-minute window. It's like if you had a 20-minute slot on TV, you wouldn't turn up.
You're trying to get your
personality across as best as possible, but you can't be like that 24 hours a day. It's just, you'd run yourself into the ground.
And
if anything, the good thing of YouTube is that you can't hide. Like, it's different with a minute clip on Instagram. It's different with a 15-second story. If you're doing 10 to 20-minute YouTube videos, then you really do capture someone's personality.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more. So yeah, we've touched on the fact that people use it for confidence, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in a bar, you want to go up to people, maybe. So as a guy or a girl, if you practice what pickup artistry, there's something called approach anxiety, which is exactly as it suggests. It's that first hurdle. It's the opening line that you get, and that's where most people struggle. They're like, that's an attractive guy or girl over the far side. I'd love to go talk to her, but what do I say? What if she KBs me, which is knocks me back? Like, what if, you know, all of these concerns that you have. So right, I'll have a few drinks later, maybe I've worked up the courage. But the weird thing is, if you continue to rely on alcohol throughout all of this series of years of your life of approaching people, you never actually develop confidence. That's the same as me saying, right, okay, how much can you lift? Well, if I've got a belt and sleeves and a bunch of exogenous testosterone and all of this caffeine and a bunch of other stuff, I can lift this. And it's like, right, okay, well, let's take all of that away. What can you lift raw? And you're like, well, hang on a second. Maybe I can't lift anything. Maybe the belt and the sleeves and everything is holding you together. Maybe your structure without that is so weak and so underdeveloped that you're essentially nothing. And that's what the concern is. It's like, if you keep on relying on alcohol, you never actually develop real confidence. You never actually learn how to be in a social situation properly. And that's why it'll be interesting when you guys speak this year to see if this last year of development for you, Ben, is like, okay, like, can I get away with just having 2 drinks?
Yeah.
Can I get away with, do I need 8 drinks? Has something happened over the last year that's actually increased my performance anxiety, whatever it might be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it almost becomes like a crutch, basically, and then becomes a placebo effect in the regard that you think it is a lot more than what it is. But that's why for me this year, I don't know if you've heard about the group before, Chris, but it's called Toastmasters.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's the speaking event. So I've now signed up to that to develop the speaking skill to be more confident in talking for other people. So I'm not relying on a bottle of Hendrix before I
jump. Do you know what's actually so interesting? Because I swam my whole life, and it was to kind of like such a high standard, like swim for GB, where we couldn't drink. So until I was 18, didn't really drink. And then I went to uni. So my first year, I was out 3 or 4 times a week. I went literally crazy. But for me, I realized that alcohol actually made me anxious, because I'm already an anxious person. I already have anxiety, and I didn't realize how much of an effect going on a night out and being like not in control of myself had on me. And maybe that is a reason why I did stop it. Like, I didn't really drink second and third year of uni. Like, I started doing the business things anyway, so I wasn't really interested. But I feel like it also had an effect in terms of, like, if I have a drink, I'm going to get anxious.
Mm-hmm. First off the bat, if anybody that's listening suffers with depression or anxiety, and you tend to get disproportionately bad hangovers compared with your friends, which you will do, stop drinking. Like, the answer is staring you in the face. It's like, just don't drink, because you can have your juice without the squeeze. You can go out, you can enjoy your night, you can do all the rest of it. You can leave at 1 in the morning and you get 80% of the enjoyment of the night out. And let me tell you, like, I've seen 1,000+ events I've worked over the last 10 years, right? Over 1,000 nights. Nothing interesting has ever happened between the hours of 1 and 3 in the morning. Ever. Nothing interesting happens. It's like slumpy, shuffling, snogging, or lads trying to like box each other and Conor McGregor. It's like nothing cool happens, right?
Yeah.
And you can leave and you can go home. And the only reason, or the main reason why people don't do it, is their friends are going to say, oh, what, you're not drinking? What you're not drinking for? That's it.
That's one of the things that I enjoyed about, I went to Newcastle for my birthday a couple of years ago. And it was a little bit different to Liverpool in regard to, I suppose, the timings. So it seemed like everyone was drinking a lot earlier, but most of the places latest would shut at 3 o'clock. Whereas in Liverpool, most of the places are shut at like 6, 7 o'clock. You've got girls crawling down the curb and guys going to walking in with the chippies, guys are walking to work. So that was the difference. People were starting earlier but going home earlier as well, which is I quite liked. It was quite different. And
Absolutely.
I didn't really find that many places that were open, unless you know of any that are
No,
in that.
there's honestly, man, there's Powerhouse, which is the gay club, and that is it. That's got a 6 a.m. license in Newcastle. So, a lot of people go to Leeds, Manchester, Birmingham, especially London. London, you've got clubs open till 9 in the morning. And they come back up and they're like, "Hey man, like the young lads that work for us as we run our events. Fuck, I wish that Newcastle had clubs that were open till 6 in the morning, till 8 in the morning." I was like, "You fuck yourself up so much with a 3 a.m. finish. What do you want a 6 a.m. finish for? You're gonna end up with like liver disease within the space of the next couple of years."
But on that note, we're talking about depression and anxiety, I suppose, leading this into more of a fitness outlook. Obviously, why I spoke to a couple of guys who I've worked with personally when I've been coaching them, why fitness has really helped them is because they've swapped that feeling of, I suppose, euphoria, endorphins are released, they feel better about themselves with a session in the gym as opposed to just relying on alcohol. And I think that's where fitness really sometimes is the underlying factor, which can act as that new crutch to move people forward with how they feel and the way they feel and their experience with that as opposed to alcohol. I know for a lot of people it can be sometimes difficult to make that transition, especially when you're, I suppose, in that bubble or you're surrounded by a lot of people who have that same social setup that you do.
Yeah, well, humans work on a sacrifice reward balance, right? Like, you've had a real hard week at work, you've been doing this, doing that, and on a weekend you want to reward yourself. But the problem is, because everyone gets into this rhythm, especially if you're from a normal working class city or town, the reward that people get on a weekend is the night out or the trip to the pub, or that might be what your parents did, what your grandparents did. That is the way the sacrifice rewards mentality happens. So what you've hit on there is that the guys that you're working with and the girls that you're working with, they're trying to replace that reward that they used to have as alcohol with a good gym routine or a hike with friends. So 6 months sober, the course that I've been talking about, we actually changed the Saturday. The Saturday is called Sober Saturday, and they have to make a plan every single week about what they're going to do on a Saturday, and it rewards their hard work and their sacrifices through the week with something. But that something is not alcohol. And you're totally right as well. The endorphins thing's a great point. I've been injured for the last sort of 12 months or so, which has meant I've kind of had to bring my training back. And the difference when I haven't been able to get that endorphin kick that I've had for the last 10 years to my mindset, to my mood, to my energy, to everything has been so stark. So, coming from someone who's seen what it's like without fitness, then with fitness, and then without fitness again, adding fitness in is it literally is like the most free positive gains to your mindset that you're ever going to get.
I think that comes down to basic behaviorism, doesn't it? In terms of positive reinforcement of a behavior is what's going to stick around. So I suppose we'll kind of move into now we're talking more about fitness, some of the physiological effects that alcohol has had. And I suppose how have you noticed more so from cutting it out as opposed to when you're maybe going out each weekend and doing your events, how has it affected your performance? How has it affected you physiologically as opposed to just the mental side of things?
Well, I mean, straight off the bat, the calories. Like the difference in calories is insane. You're playing around, most people that are cutting, you're playing around with what, maybe on a moderate cut, 3,000 calorie surplus a week, 3,500, like 300 a day, something like that ish. So it's not actually all that much. And one night out can completely scupper those gains. And if you have 2 nights out a week, you're going to put yourself into a surplus instead of a deficit without even seeing it. So that was one of the things straight off the bat. There's a bunch of stats that I can throw at you if you want, which are a real kind of scary. But there's
Finally,
love a stat.
okay. So there was a study that was done by The Lancet, which is the largest alcohol study that's ever been done. And they basically did about 1. No, sorry, 16 million people did this study, and it's pretty terrifying when you actually look at how much damage has been done. So alcohol is the number one cause of people under the age of 40 dying early. That's it. So all of the associated effects together, it's the number one. It's called disability-adjusted life years. So disability-adjusted life years under the age of 40, it is the number one reason why people die early. It's also an what's referred to as an all-cause mortality risk, which means that if you drink, the likelihood of you dying from anything goes up. So that's the likelihood of you dying from cancer, accident, being hit by a car, liver disease, emphysema, all that. Everything that you could have going wrong is increased by that. So I mean, those are two real bad things, right? But the real kicker, and this was sent forward by the UK's health minister about 2 years ago, and a lot of people, you'll have heard this before, right, where they go, well, yeah, but one glass of red wine every 2 weeks actually is really good for you because it's got like resveratrol and it's got like antioxidants in it and stuff like that. And this is the quote, right, that anyone that's heard that needs to know. And the quote is, the safest level of alcohol consumption is 0 grams of ethanol per week. That's not one, that's not five, that's not half a one, that's not one every month. It is the more that you drink, the closer you are to death. That's it. That is the fact, right, when it comes down to just pure health. The more that you drink, the closer you are to death. Now, that's not to say that you can't drink and also live, you know, a happy life or, you know, an effective life. And someone will always be able to, well, my dad's had 5 pints a night for the last 50 years and he's still alive at 85 years old. You're right. Yeah, that's cool. But your dad is beating the odds, not playing them. Yeah. So that, I mean, from the health perspective, it's real scary. Like when you look at it, it is really, really concerning.
Yeah, you can't really argue with those points. It's as black and white as that, I suppose. as most people are kind of looking for the balance between that. And I think
it's like it's on the same level, because I was reading a study like drinking is on the same level as smoking and asbestos, but people don't see it as like having 5 cigarettes and 5 glasses of wine and asbestos in a building and. It's like you almost don't want to relate it.
Yeah.
You don't want to know that alcohol is that bad for you. Because it's so easily accessible though as well, in terms of picking up from the shop or going out, and people can't accept it.
They're willfully ignorant, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. I think coming from the position a lot of our listeners will come from is from a health perspective and kind of wanting to know some of the effects it probably has on the body. So with it being a diuretic, it's obviously going to make you dehydrated, it's going to upset the electrolyte balance, it's going to do a bunch of other things, and it will, I suppose, in some degree, although there's a lot of arguments and studies regarding the effects on testosterone for guys, it still can lower your testosterone down by like up to 23% for a certain period, and for like 10 to 16 hours, and the more that we do drink, the lower that becomes. Obviously those levels will rise as you get over your hangover, but generally it's thought the worse the hangover is, the more effect it can have on testosterone levels the next day. So I suppose when you're going to the gym and you're getting your gains, then that is going to be something which is affected to some degree the next day as well.
Isn't there something about protein synthesis? Doesn't it halt protein synthesis?
Yeah, so the lower your testosterone levels will be, the more it will affect protein synthesis the next day. And it can last anywhere to like half a day to 36 hours, depending on how much it is going to knock your testosterone levels. Again, there is some debate on whether and how much it affects testosterone levels, but I don't think you can argue that it will affect them to some degree the next day.
It starts to affect you though as well. Even when you've been drinking, you fall asleep quicker. But because it affects your REM sleep so much, which is your deepest part of sleep, it'll affect your muscle synthesis and your muscle recovery. So even though it might not play a part directly, if you've had one, it's going to affect your sleep. Your sleep affects your recovery. Your sleep affects muscle building.
It affects everything.
Yeah, of course it does.
And then obviously the big thing is the next day is mainly the amount of calories that you're slamming back from eating shit, because the other hormone that alcohol affects is leptin, which is obviously what controls
how you feel full.
Our satiety and how full we are and how much we want to eat. So if you don't play with leptin and stuff, there's no doubt that you could easily slam back a KFC family bucket the next day, no questions asked.
I bet you can scran on a hangover, Ben.
Oh, mate, I used to go. That was one of the reasons I had to stop because the next
So
day,
much food.
I remember going. I think it was after because my birthday's on Halloween, so it gets pretty wild.
Oh,
So like the next day, I could go and get like a family bucket, and that the family buckets came with like 8 sides of chips, like 2 liters of Coke, and I could
all for
easy,
you.
yeah, I could easy bash that back. So I think that's probably the biggest one for most people is that with the ca extra calories and stuff that they're having. The way that alcohol works, it's obviously it's still a calorie, but it's then the way that our energy systems are used by the body. So it's going to use alcohol as an energy as opposed to
Glucose
using
and fat
glycolysis and beta
oxidation.
oxidation.
I tell you what, there are some knowledge bombs getting dropped here. I
So
hope everyone's got their notepads out. Fuck me.
with what happens is, so our bodies, when we use energy, you use glucose and fat, but when you bring alcohol into the equation, your body then starts breaking down the alcohol, and that's like a four-step process. So as that's taking place, no one's using the fat and the glucose. That's the easiest way to put it. So that fat is then just stored in our bodies because alcohol takes over so much, and it's such a hard process to break down into energy. So
Yeah.
when you do go for your scran after a night out and you've been drinking, it's actually is going to store as fat. So that is one of the biggest killers. It's not as such always the alcohol.
I think that's what people
Like if
believe,
you
though. It's
have
alcohol that puts weight on you. It's not. It's just that you're swapping the energy system to something else.
Yeah, but if you're having like a gin and tonic or whatever, but it's not as bad. But then if you go and have like your cheesy chips or whatever, they're just going to be stored as fat,
Yeah.
which is what a lot of people don't understand in terms of fat loss and
Yeah.
alcohol. We're not saying don't do it.
Yeah,
Like,
I suppose
we're
this podcast
not,
sounds like you must not drink ever again.
because we're not saying that. It's just about having balance and understanding that if you do have a fitness goal and you seriously want to lose weight or fat loss, drinking's probably not going to help. That's like the
Not
easiest way.
probably, it will
It
not
will
help.
not
No, no,
help.
not at all. You touched on about the REM sleep as well. So a lot of people use alcohol to help themselves get to sleep on a night time. But
It's not helping.
the fact of the matter is that you're not sleeping when you've had a drink, you're sedated. And there's a
Yeah.
big difference. And that's the reason why you mentioned about the fact that it affects your REM sleep. So a lot of people that are listening might have had big, heavy night, then no dreams throughout pretty much all of the night, and then mental dreams at the end of the night. And that's for precisely that reason, that your body's been working through all this alcohol, getting rid of it, getting out of that sedated state, and then has finally got to the point where it's like, right, I'm backed up. I need to get this REM sleep in. And it just drills the shit out of you and gives you some ridiculous dream. And that's what happens. And that's the situation that you've come up with there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose the thing is, when we're looking to get balance, then, or because most of our listeners probably aren't going to listen to this and go, I'm going sober. But
Which we don't expect them
what we
to.
want them to do is kind of take some of these points away and be more mindful of them for both mindset and the physiological benefits of it. So if you could give some tips away, Chris, in regard to drinking or lowering the consumption or some of the things that you've worked on a couple of your projects with, what would be your main take-home tips?
The easiest way, I think, to do it is to have periods where you're going to go sober. So all that balance is less of the extremes on both sides, right? But you could say, right, I'm going to do 28 days, I'm going to do the next 4 weeks, and I'm not going to drink. And
So
then
like
I
so January.
but just do it consistently throughout the year, right? So my rule of thumb is, I think that every 1 year you should do at least 1 month sober. Every 2 years, you should do at least 3 months sober, and every 5 years, you should do at least six. And if you stick to something like that as a rule, it means that across that whole period, across a 5 year period, you're really going to rate down your reduction. Obviously, another thing to consider as well is if you can set yourself a drink limit on a night, the difference between 5 drinks and 10 drinks doesn't double your enjoyment of the night, but more than doubles your hangover the next day.
Yeah.
So setting yourself, right, okay, where's my limit? Where do I know that if I have 5 drinks, 3 drinks, 8 drinks, I can still perform the next day. I can still get in and stick to my diet. My MyFitnessPal's not going to look like a big arithmetic problem that I've got to work my way through. And I'm still gonna get to train. I'm not going to be affected in terms of mindset. So set yourself a hard limit in terms of that. One of my friends has used a thing where he's got himself 12 cards, 12 playing cards, and every time he wants to go on a night out, he has to take one of the cards out of this deck, and he puts them in the bin, and he can only use the card. So he's got one night out per month, essentially, he could rate it as. He's got 12 of them a year. And that means that he ensures that he's not going over the top. And he thinks, oh, fucking hell, I've got to go out tonight. Right, can I do it sober? Because if I can do it sober, then Jonathan's wedding in a couple of months' time, then I can drink at that. And he's playing, you know what I mean? So he's playing with a finite resource. Because our health is a finite resource. And if you want to allow, if you want to have a goal, if your goal is, I have to be at whatever percent body fat by summer, I have to be at whatever percent strength by summer, you have to make some concessions somewhere. You cannot have everything. You can't have your cake and your beer and eat it. Like, that's not the way that it's going to work, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think with some of the tips in terms of, like, a health and fitness benefit, like, some of the simple ones from our perspective would be applying more logic. So in terms of looking at it from a caloric point of view would be exactly the way that you're going to spend money. You have your set amount for the day. And therefore, if you're going to go out and drink, you need to reserve some money from somewhere else. So it's holding calories in the bank so then you can go out and drink and have a couple whilst still semi being on track and not going completely over the top. So whether that's you've got to put a meal aside or put a snack aside or whatever it may be, whether that is you are drinking some kind of lower calorie drink, drinking lower calorie mixes, diet and that kind of thing, so you're not going completely over top with the calories. If you are someone who's looking to cut, that might be from a physiological point of view that you consume a lot less carbs and a bit more protein because it's gonna have a better effect on protein synthesis the next day. There's you might want to have more water intake to make sure that
water's a big one because it's a diuretic, isn't alcohol. You're just constantly dehydrating. Also makes you go to the toilet so much, which dehydrates you even more. So having water and a drink on a night out, nothing wrong with it. Just keeps you hydrated.
Yeah, so I think Go on, Chris.
Have you got some suggestions of lower calorie drinks that people can have on a night?
I always drink diet drinks anyway, regardless. So I think for me, having a diet drink would always, as a mixer, I'd always have. I don't drink a lot of beer. If I have a beer, it's generally because either I'm just having one, which rarely happens, or probably because I've been socially pressured into it's a fucking beer, so have it.
Have you seen Corona Light? Have you seen that?
Yeah, mate, I've drunk that a couple of times.
89 calorie beer.
That's brilliant.
Outstanding.
It's brilliant. So I'll if I do have one, I usually have a light. I drank quite a bit of that in America.
I have gin and tonic.
You have a lot of gin and tonic. I tend to drink rum or whiskey. I'll sometimes have what's the phone? I can't even think what it is now. Look, you all like have quite a lot.
Amaretto,
but I'll drink it Diet on Coke. The so don't mind that.
Oh, okay.
So there are some of the things either. What would you trend to drink when you were going out?
Same, exactly the same. So like hyper light beers if you can. It's America's amazing for this. America's got all crazy low calorie beers and stuff, but certainly aiming for as light of a beer as you can do. And then as soon as you get into this, I mean, anyone that's listening that's still drinking full fat soda. Much on the table. So some of the lads that work for us who'll say, hey mate, would you go and get me a Red Bull, and I'll go grab them a couple of Red Bulls from behind the bar and I'll come back with sugar-free Red Bulls. They go, what's that? I'm like, it's Red Bull, that's what you asked for. I said, no, can I have the sugar one? I'm like, why?
I actually don't think, I don't really drink fizzy drinks, but they don't taste different. I can't tell.
It's the freest calories that you ever gonna get. My god. But so that, like a diet mixer with vodka. I remember in uni, you might have done this back in uni, Ben, did you ever try like a pre-workout like Jack 3D and vodka or No Explode and vodka?
Mate, yeah, I was gonna get onto that. Well, one of the things that I suppose on that thing talking about mixers, it was so funny. Last year, we went out for Lucy's birthday, a few of us, and Lucy experienced her first quad vod with a Wicked poured in. That was the mixer.
It was honestly, it was like the worst thing of my life. It's like, what was it, 4 shots of vodka?
Yeah, quad vod, yeah.
I never heard of quad vod in my life. Yes, quad vod. Give me a quad vod. What's a quad vod? Never again. You live and learn. You don't need to do it again.
Didn't experience much more the night after that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But I suppose on that note, the next day, what would your opinion be, or what would you usually do in regards to training the next day after you've been out? Are you someone who would get out and be active and get in and try and train, or would you leave it alone completely?
Optimally, definitely get in and do something. So I think, let's say that someone's pulled the pin and decided to go on a night out that's moderately heavy, so that they're at least still slightly conscious of what they're doing. Because it's all well and good us giving you instructions, but if you can't see, you can't follow them. Definitely pint minimum of a pint of water before you go to bed on a night time. And then when you wake up to get rid of that partway through the night, I'd refill the glass and go again. So I'd just keep hydrating as much as you can. Upon waking, I'd go for a walk as quickly as you can. So just get fresh air. Because we've all been there, right? Where you're wallowing in this horrible hangover, just staring at the ceiling, wishing life would end. But if you get up and start to have some semblance of a normal life again, like, right, oh, there's other people, there's fresh air, there's sunlight, you know, just get something moving, get that blood flow going. And then when it comes to training, like, your willpower is going to be down. Like, concede the fact that you're not going to PB the next day. I also don't think that any highly technical or highly loaded lifts are the best thing to do. So if it was me personally, I'd go and do something real easy, monostructural, like a C2 bike. So I'd go and do some intervals on a C2 bike, like 2 minute, 1 minute, 30 second intervals with a descending pyramid, and just get a sweat on. You know, sit at, I don't know, what, 140, 150 heart rate or something like that. Like, nothing mental. I'm not going to get some crazy adaptation, but we all know the first training session after a night out is bad, but that first training session can be 3 days later or 4 days later. So it's like, I might as well get that shit session out of the way now. And I don't know whether you guys agree with this, but someone asked me on a podcast ages ago, what resets your mood better, a night's sleep or a training session? And for me, I can carry my mood through from the night before, sleep through it, and wake up in the morning and still feel the echo of that mood from the day before if I've been stressed or anxious or whatever it might be. But if I walk into the gym and I have a good training session, I walk out and it is just like, you know, when you had an etch-a-sketch and you went like, and you just shake the etch-a-sketch and it just, everything disappears. That's what training feels like to me. So it's like, look, go in, sweat it out. You will feel better. I promise you'll feel better, and you'll hate it before and you'll hate it during. But once you are done, you'll feel so proud of yourself because you've overcome something that was so much more challenging than it should have been. And you've learned a lesson, which is don't go that hard again.
100%. I think that's the hardest thing for most people to fathom is moving from your pit of self-wallow to sitting or doing something in the gym is so hard to wrap your head around, isn't it? And I think that they're my two pieces of advice when I'm coaching people who have been on the piss is either one, just try and hit a step count because it's nice and easy. You can get outside, you can get on your feet, reset your mind. Or two is almost just take it as like a deload. So even if you're working at 50, 60%, you don't need to be going all out. The only time I would really, not that I get a lot of clients like this, but the only time I would really advise people not to train is if they've gone out and had a load of Charlie the night
You
before,
do not
because
want to spike that heart rate the next day,
yeah, you
no.
don't want to get the heart rate up when you're already at a very vulnerable position. So that would be my only time I would.
The step count's an amazing one. That's a real good one. If you were to say to someone, look, if you just get your 10,000 in tomorrow, like if you just get your whatever your target is for the day, if you get that in, because you're going to have to be outside, you're not going to do it pacing around the room. So fresh air, blue sky, honestly, it'll make such a difference. I think, I can't remember the tweet that I saw. Someone said, almost all of the problems in my life can be fixed with a glass of water, a 10-minute walk, a nap, or a good meal. And it's like, there's not much actually that happens in life that I can't get over by that. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah, no, that's
90% of.
really true.
100%. And that's something
Walking's
that I did the other day. I
amazing.
always went for a walk. Most of my ideas
Go for a walk and put
and
this
content come,
podcast on.
So if you listen to this podcast now, or you're bored doing something, get on a bike, get on a walk, and get active and fill your head with something which is productive. So
Have you read Essentialism by Greg McKeown?
I've got,
You.
wait, I think I've actually got that in my room now.
It's got a little squiggle, a
Got
little circular squiggle on the front.
Yeah, I've got it. I
Yeah.
haven't read all of it, but I have started reading it.
Well, he's got a walk. He has the Essentialism walk, which is in that, right? Which is precisely what you're talking about there. Go out. This is where I get my ideas. I allow my ideas to free flow. I haven't got the demands of input and stuff like that. And you know, if you were to design an environment that was nice to be in a hangover, it would probably be like a gentle breeze, quite light and airy, fairly calm. Like that is what a walk is. The environment that you want to feel better in is the other side of your bedroom door.
Yeah, that is
100%.
literally so true.
100%.
Amazing.
I think that note is a very nice place to wrap up on, because the guys can now pop this podcast on and go for a nice stroll and clear their mind, especially if you are hungover today. Listen to this. But where can people find you and your podcast if people want to hear a little bit more, Chris?
For sure. So wherever you listen, search Modern Wisdom, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever it might be, Modern Wisdom, or at Chris Will X, wherever you follow me, send me a message, send me presents, send me money, send me whatever you want.
There's no nudes.
No, no nudes, no nudes. Chelsea Ferguson, though, she can send you some.
That is great, Chris. It's been a pleasure to have you on there.
Thank you
this
so
episode
much.
Anyway, and to all those who are listening, we are very, very thankful for all you guys that have been sharing it on Instagram, on Facebook and Story, so please continue to do so. And if you could take a few 30 seconds out of your day to leave a review on this episode of the podcast, that would be very much appreciated.
Indeed, and as always, this podcast is sponsored by the My Coach School. We actually have the the waiting list is open for our next
challenge.
So 100%. So we'll leave that link somewhere for you as well. As always, a massive thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you in the next podcast. Bye.